At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hello, and welcome to the Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver show on UK Health Radio. We're happy you're here. On the show, we're certain that you'll relate to the caregiver stories and find comfort with your honorary sisters. Before we start, I want to remind you to go to our website, confessionsofareluctantcaregiver.com, and sign up for our newsletter. We'd love to connect with you on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Twitter, and YouTube. We're sharing tons of useful information that you can use as well as chat with our followers. Now, let's jump right into today's confession. Hey, Jay.
Well, hi, Natalie.
How are you doing this morning?
You know, I'm so excited to be here today.
Really? Is there anything, like any particular reason?
You know, because we have like a super cool guest.
Yes, we do. Actually, yes, we do. I we have been trying to get with Jordan for a minute, and honestly, he's so cool. He's like really cool. So like I've got I think I love Bruce Perry. You know, Bruce Perry is like my LinkedIn crush, my professional crush. And don't tell Jordan. He's also, I think he's really cool. So anyway, Jay. Tell us about Jordan Peace.
I hope his wife doesn't listen to this.
Oh, I'm sorry,
podcast.
Jordan's wife. I promise it's totally HR appropriate.
Okay, let's get busy, Natalie.
Okay, so let's do it.
Jordan Peace, because he does have a last name, Jordan Peace is the co-founder and CEO of Fringe. And Fringe is a lifestyle benefits company, co-founded in 2018. And why did he do that? That's because they realized that most people, especially millennials, don't understand their company's corporate benefits. I'm not a millennial, and I got to tell you,
I was thinking the same thing, Jay.
Either, Jordan, so I'm so happy you're here.
I don't really understand my benefits either.
Yeah. Jordan lives in Richmond, Virginia, with his wife and 5 kids.
That's right.
So he started his caregiving journey when he was 10 years old, and it goes along with a story about a bagel and his mom. Mm. She and his family would go on to fight cancer, which they call the enemy, through Jordan's college years. And today, he says that fight has shaped him into the person he is. Mm. Jordan, we are so happy to have you today. And I got to tell you, we have talked with no one who said a bagel started their caregiving journey. And
no.
I kind of am like, you know what? A bagel that was something of a blessing, I think.
It was. Yeah. And thank you so much for having me and for your just unbelievably kind and over the top words about how cool I am. No one with 5 children is that cool.
We wouldn't tell anybody.
To them anyway. I'm just old. But yeah, no, it's appropriate. We talk about a bagel first. We're recording in the morning. I actually haven't had breakfast yet. I would love a bagel right now. My mom, who is kind of the star of this story, and was the star of our family, I would say, was a preschool teacher. And she was cutting frozen bagels, as preschool teachers do at times, to serve a snack to the kids, and ended up cutting through the bagel and into her hand. And she sliced her finger pretty good. And because she sliced her finger pretty good and she had bandages and everything on her finger, my dad had to wash her hair and like help her bathe for a period of time. And as a result of that, he noticed a growth on her shoulder, that turned out to be a certain type of muscle cancer, rhabdomyosarcoma, I believe is the term. Can't believe that just came back to me. And it was like 20 years ago, more than that. But that just came back to me, and it was a very, very aggressive cancer. And because they found it early, she was able to get chemo and surgery and overcome that. And that was not the cancer that was lethal to her. And so we probably got 12 extra years with her as a result of her cutting her finger while we were cutting a bagel. So,
And so you were 10 years old when that happened, and your mom had multiple bouts of cancer. And so, I think that I guess it's you. Okay, so it's you, your dad, and your brother. No sisters.
That's right. Just me and my older brother.
Okay, and were the did you have dogs? Were they boys as well? Because in our house, everybody was
They
girls.
were. They were. We had two. My poor mom. We had two male dogs all the time. So we had two cocker spaniels. One died. We get a new male cocker spaniel, and then we
Boom.
just keep doing it.
Done.
So we always had two dogs, and I was called by the dog's names and my brother's name. And
Same. That's a And
family
look, you
thing.
turned out totally fine.
Yeah, you're
You
good,
turned out.
Jordan.
I guess. I mean,
With,
debatable.
with because you were young, did you was that something that you talked about, or was that kind of a we didn't really discuss that? It was,
Well, I was the younger of the two. So
Yeah.
I was 10. My brother was 13 at the time that she was first diagnosed. And so it was my parents were really forthright with us about what was happening. I mean, I don't remember them talking about cancer in such a way that this is something that you could lose your life from. Like, I don't think that was in the conversation, but hey, mama is sick and she needs our help and support, and she's got to do these treatments and surgeries. And I mean, we learned pretty quick, and were involved pretty quick with what was going on. Just a really tight-knit family. Extremely tight-knit family. The kind of family like where if I would go up in my room for a few minutes, my mom would call up and be like, "What's wrong? You okay? Why aren't you hanging out?" Just and that and for that reason, I'd say my poor dad, because he's the only introvert in the family, and he was not allowed to be an introvert. That was not an option in our family.
I love that.
So
So,
we knew what was going on for sure.
Do you think at that, because your mom had multiple bouts of cancer, did you at that point with the first, do you feel like anything changed? Because you're in middle school at this point. And did anything change beyond probably some adjusting of schedules? Anything change in your life that felt like, this is different or that sort of idea?
I think I don't know if it would have been overnight, but over the course of a year or two, I'd say everything changed. I to give my mom credit that she deserves it, she did not make our family about her cancer. She did not. She was all about us and what we had going on and cheering for us and our achievements and what we were focused on. And so she was very outward oriented, and any doctor or nurse that cared for her would tell you the same, because she was always like, getting to know them and what their kids' names were, and I'm praying for you, and like she was that type of person, and so not because of her, but simply because of the weight of as we begun to realize what this thing is and what it means. And her mother passed away from cancer when she was 53, and so I knew that story growing up, because I didn't know my grandma. She passed before I was born. And so I had a sense of this is a dangerous thing. This needs to be something that we're all in and focused on. And I don't know what I thought I could do or to help. At 10 years old, I'm not a doctor, and not Doogie Howser going to show up and just save the day. But it just felt like it's my responsibility to focus on this. And it became the focus of our family.
Did your mom care for her mother? Was she a primary caretaker for her mom?
I don't know a ton of that story. Unfortunately, my mom didn't share those kinds of details. She mm-hmm. shared a lot about her relationship with her mom.
Yeah. Okay.
Like her death and what that meant to the family and so forth. But I would guess that just knowing my mom and her two sisters and their personalities, that my mom was probably the primary. Mm-hmm. Because she would have been a teenager and like very capable and just sort of a natural caregiving kind of personality anyway. I'd imagine she very much took care of her.
But still young when she was in that role as well. So she had some insight into how you guys, throughout your time, how you guys were adjusting to her own cancer.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And I think that's probably why she was so hyper-focused on not making it about her and wanting to make it about her boys and mm-hmm. their lives and what they had going on. Because I think she probably knew the pain of being a caregiver and what that was. And my dad, I mean, he was just such an unbelievable caregiver to her, like just mm-hmm. so sacrificial, maybe beyond what was healthy to sacrifice even. Looking back at it now as an adult, then it was like, drop everything and care for her, like, duh, but looking back at it, I'm like, was there enough kind of self-care that I'm not sure, if it was.
Oh yeah.
I think my mom had that perspective, and I think that perspective allowed my brother and I to have lives, outside of being caregivers, which was a difficult thing to do. Cause it's just, I mean, if you've experienced this, and I know you guys have your stories too, like it's just this all encompassing thing. It's hard to look beyond cancer, it becomes what life is about.
Yeah.
Well, okay. And it sounds like, we met Dr. Guy Mattel, and he is a psychiatrist who specializes in oncology. And he talked about how do you take cancer from being the center of your life and making it a part of your life and allowing for other parts and pieces to exist as well. And it sounds like your mom really was able to take her previous experience and try to give you the opportunity to have that too. To allow for that to happen. And I think no matter how much your mom tried, the reality is you all saw that and were influenced by that care, that servant heart. Your mom clearly was a servant heart. Your mom, I mean, she was a preschool teacher. Like she has a servant heart. God bless her. That's all I'm going to say. Because the little people, like they're hard to deal with at times, even teenagers. But I mean, I think that would be, but it influenced you. It impacted who you are today by watching her care for you and then vice versa. It sounds very much like a family of care, supporting one another.
I think if it wasn't for her, I'm not sure that I would have very much empathy. And what I mean by that is I remember thinking as a young teenager or preteen, I remember looking at my friends and their lives and whatever struggles they had going through and being like, that's nothing. Like, suck it up. Nobody in your family's dying. Like I remember just this cold-hearted, like there's life and death and then there's everything else. And if nobody's dying, you have no reason to complain. It was like just no empathy. And there's some bit of truth to that. Like we should be grateful when we're healthy and like there's truth to it. But my mom, she saw that in me and in my brother. And she would say to us routinely, everybody's problems are real to them. That was her like refrain.
Wow.
And I say that, sorry, I'm getting upset and talking about my mom, but I say that to my kids. I say that to myself. I say that to my wife. I say that to everybody in my life now when I see them not showing empathy for someone else's struggle, because if you haven't been through a life and death situation, if you haven't been through something extreme, then something that I would call small feels just as big to that person as cancer felt to me.
Yep.
And my mom, through that phrase and through her heart, she taught me empathy. Mm. And I think that has developed my character more than probably anything else in my life. Mm. Wow. I'm like, man, this is, I'm like, I'm not going to cry. This is like so many years ago.
That is, I mean, sometimes you get that in your head. I know there are things that my dad, who, you know, he passed away when at 58, and it's been 12 years ago, but there are things that I come across, and it's just one little, it's like that. He would always say, when I get frustrated with my mom, Jordan, my dad's voice rings in my head, and he always just said, be patient, girls. And it's the simple, but I hear it. And it's like with anybody, and it's anything, it's not even just my mom now, it's anything that occurs when I get frustrated, I hear my dad and he's like, be patient, girls. And I'm like, Jay, why are you getting upset? And so it is, it's those little things. And then it hits me and I'm, you know, in the grocery store, mad that I'm in line. And so that's okay though. But that's the impact that she had, which is just amazing. Like just what a beautiful person.
That's a gift. That is a gift. So your mom beats it.
Yeah.
At first, round one, because honestly, sadly, it is multiple rounds. And so a couple of years, so is, what is the time duration? Because I agree with you. I mean, you made a comment about, in just kind of writing to us about your story a little bit about, like, we hate the word remission.
Oh yeah.
My husband feels the same way. We hate the word remission because what that really is code for is it's going to come back. We don't want it to come back. I don't want to be in remission. I want to be cured. Everybody wants a cure.
Right.
We're going to never have to worry about it again.
Yeah.
And the ugly truth of cancer is that you are knowingly poisoning yourself and it will at some point come back again because you poisoned yourself. It's like standing, I describe it as standing on a railroad track and seeing the train come to you and you're not playing chicken. You are fully prepared to get hit.
Yeah.
And that is it. That's a scary thing. Mm. So how much time passes before they find cancer in your mom in another area?
Yeah.
Give or take,
I'd say 2 years.
Okay. So now you're probably eighth grade, working towards eighth grade, towards high school. And so do you feel like, you know, because you're growing. I mean, and think about these are like critical years of you're finding yourself and you're finding who you want to be. How did you and your brother, because now your brother is definitely in high school. Like he's driving.
Yeah.
And so he's cruising you around. How does that go?
Yeah.
Did it feel different? Did you think it was different?
Gosh, my mom was such a unique person. It was devastating. It was probably worse than the first time, right? Mm. Because now we know what to expect. And now we know how much she's going to suffer, right? And how long this whole process is going to take. And this is a new type of cancer, like completely new cancer that she had going on. And then the reason for that, well, I'll get to that in a minute. But brand new cancer, new area of the body, we've been kind of like we did it, we're past, and it was always a we thing. It was just my family was always very much we, you know, like we beat it, we're past it, whatever. And then it comes again, and it's like, what? Like how could a person possibly be this unfortunate to have a new cancer? And the doctor, that's how they described it. They're like, this is not a cancer returning. This is a new cancer. Mm-hmm. And which made no sense at the time, and it makes sense now because now I understand a little about my heredity and so forth, that science that they didn't have back then to test for these things. But no, it was awful. It was awful. And so I think that that was probably kind of a stunting moment for my brother and I, that we kind of like, we thought that this was like just an event in childhood and that was over. And now we're like going back to normal life, and it was coming back, and it was like, oh no, this, I don't know if I would have said this at the time, but it was like, well, this is going to define my childhood, you know, like it kind of that realization that like, oh no, this isn't just like a one-time deal. This is a battle. We're going to have to keep fighting. And it was awful. Mm. It was awful.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityCairo.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah. You said, you mentioned something. You said it was me and my brother. As far as me and my brother, we realized maybe this was something, this was our fight for our child during our childhood. Yeah. But what did it do for your all's relationship? I'm just curious. Mm. Do you feel like you guys were closer? That it was a, you said yeah. your family's really close, but do you think it made you all closer? Did y'all talk about it?
Yeah, we did. We definitely talked about it. I think it forced my brother and I to deal with things together at an age where people don't normally deal with things like that. Like yeah. things that were too serious for children to like mm-hmm. converse about and come to good conclusions. And, mm-hmm. you know, and I'd say it kind of, what is the word? It made our relationship extreme. We would fight and we would just loathe each other, and then we would just love each other. Like, and when that's just brothers anyway, but yeah, like yeah. it just made it more extreme because it was so yeah. much more weight and emotion to the whole thing.
Right.
And yeah. you know, it's and intense. When you're kind of caregiving and you're in the same position, like I'm a son, you're a son, we're both in the same spot, you start judging like, well, you're doing that for her, yeah. and I did. Well, I, you know, like,
oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Instead of the comparison.
That's cute. Yeah, that's, yeah.
So it was, I wouldn't say it was like all positive then, you know, like in the moment. And as we go along with the story, I'll tell you, it turned out to be unbelievably positive. And eventually I would say my brother became my friend. Mm. And wow. that's changed my adulthood, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we come out of that cancer and you're in high school.
We went on a cruise.
We went on a cruise.
Yes. We did. We were talking about cruise before we hit recorded.
That's right.
We went on a cancer-free celebration cruise.
I love it.
So, I love it. And, I love it.
Yeah. I have no idea. I must have been 15 or 16 mm-hmm. yeah. or something like that going on a cruise, which is an awkward time to go on a cruise, by the way, you know, because I just want to like, you know, talk to the girls that are around and they put on like little teen dance parties, but everybody feels too awkward and the parents are, it's a weird time to go on a cruise. You should be a kid or like 18 plus. Like I wouldn't want to go on a teenage cruise. But
I hear they have some more like more social stuff now. I think yeah. we're a touch older.
That's a note to NCL.
I'm like, hey, David, can we standards? Make sure that we get the boys and the girls get to talk to each other in a therapeutically yeah. appropriate way?
Right, exactly. Right. But what do you do when you go on a cruise? You sit by the pool and you drink. Maybe you hit up the casino. You go to a show. Like, I couldn't do any of those things.
So, confession.
I'm just saying.
Oh, I think it's totally appropriate. I love that you guys are like, we're cancer free. You know what, Jordan? I'll say this. Jason and I talked about like we're gonna have this big party, and we said it right up front when he's cancer free, yeah. we're gonna have this big party. And the weird part, and I'm interested in your thought. The weird part is that when we came back. And even after he got the all clear in October of last year, and he had an all clear again in June of this year, because we went back his 1 year review, we never had that party yet. It's mm-hmm. funny. We never had a party yet in the sense of we're celebrating, because he still has the side effects from his cancer.
Right.
It's because he had a head and neck cancer. He can't taste. And so we were going to have a party that involved food, and he can't taste yet. So right. we're waiting on taste. And I really am hoping to have a party in sometime in this lifetime, but because yeah. I'm not sure it's going to. But we thought also life would return to normal, like what it was before.
Yeah.
And do you think that you had pre-10 or pre-cancer? And did you feel like you achieved some sort of normal? And you're young then. So, you know, you're not sure what normal is. But do you think every time your mom had cancer, beat it. You all established a new normal. Then she got diagnosed again. Was it a different new normal? Did every time get to be a different normal? Did you feel like you went back? Because ours was a total new normal. Yeah, we couldn't return back to where it was.
I don't think we went back. You know, I really don't. I mean, I think, you know, at 10, I think you're still, especially boys are a little less mature typically. I think at 10, I probably could believe that my parents were these kind of superheroes that nothing could touch them, nothing could hurt them, nothing could hurt me as a result of them, you know, type of mentality. And like, certainly that never came back, you know? And then, yeah, I think those in-between moments were really sweet and like great, but they weren't childhood in that same way. They weren't this like oblivious, innocent bliss, you know. It was just like, I was aware that the world is scary and that life can be short, and that there's not a lot you can do to control that. And so I think I had to deal with a lot of fear that most people probably just don't encounter until much later in life.
Yeah. Do you think that's made you more resilient? More insightful in how you interact today now, and how even how you're raising your own children. You're like, what you expose them to versus living in that blissful ignorance. Because childhood is blissful ignorance. Like the worst thing we have to do is we go to the seventh grade dance and all the boys and the girls, kind of like the cruise ship, everybody's standing up against the walls, just kind of holding them up. Nobody's dancing, but you really like that song and you want to dance.
Yeah, but you're too embarrassed to do anything.
Right. You just sit there paralyzed in fear.
Gosh, how does it impact my children? Now that's we're gonna need another hour for that.
Right? No, it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah. But I mean,
maybe your parenting
I raise
style.
I raise my kids in a pretty unique way, I would say. And like, thank goodness for my wife that did not grow up and have the same story as me. So they can have like a normal mom, but they don't have a normal dad. You know, like I talk to them about adult things. Like yesterday to my 7-year-old boy, I explained to him why when we go to swim meets, they won't allow non-swimmers in the pool because of liability reasons. And then for the next 30 minutes, I explained insurance and lawsuits and like all this stuff to him. And he's like, why are you telling me this? But it's like, I'm in a hurry for them to grow up. I'm in a hurry for them to like have perspective and knowledge of what's coming and what adulthood might be like. Cause I did that. I had to grow up really fast. I had to like talk to doctors and like know stuff about medical procedures and, you know, whatever. And so I think it's just normal to me. I'm like, you can do more than this. You can do more than just play and do homework. Like you step it up, you know? But then also, I mean, the kind of the sad part is I think of myself as having an expiration date in my early 50s, you know, that I'm just like, there's only but so much time I have to communicate all these things to my kids that I might not communicate until they're 25, but I'm going to just go ahead and do it so long as it's not like emotionally damaging, you know, and it's the fine line to walk. But
time is precious. Time is precious.
Time is really precious. My grandmother died at 53. My mom died at 53. You know, and it's just really hard. And that's a phenomenon I think it's pretty common that you imagine that you will die around the same age as your parents, right? Like that, most people do that. And so even though my mom died at 53 and my dad's still living, for some reason I associate that with my mom. And
that makes sense though.
Yeah,
it really does. Okay. So I think that's the other piece that we want to explain, because your mom's cancer is so unique.
Yes.
But
yeah,
that's why. Because so people are going to be wondering, like, why do you really think you're going to die at 53?
Yeah,
I want to tell a little bit like about that, because I'd never heard of this. I know Jay and I talked about it. I've never heard of this. And so if you want to explain just a little bit and then how that has influenced you as well, because then you got cancer again.
So and my grandmother had cancer multiple times as well. And you know, I think we all kind of chalked it up to like, well, we're just a really unfortunate family, or there's something genetic, but cancer's not supposed to be all that genetic. So I don't, you know, there is apparently, and this was not technology available when my mom was living, but about 10 years ago, her younger sister, my aunt, was genetically tested for all sorts of things. And one of her chromosomes came back, chromosome test came back, said that she had something called Lynch syndrome. And Lynch, which I believe is L-Y-N-C-H syndrome, is a genetic, it's a mutation of one of your chromosomes that causes you to be highly likely to contract exactly five different cancers. And they even know in what order you will contract them. And two out of the five are in female organs, which is a comfort to me to a degree. That's some protection for me. And of course, you get a chromosome from your dad and from your mom. And so that chromosome I got from my mom, I have Lynch syndrome. My brother does not, which is a blessing that he doesn't. And one of my cousins does, and, you know, one of my cousins doesn't. And so it's kind of a 50-50 split throughout the family. So, I mean, it's not kind of just this purely emotional reason that I'm like, oh, I only have 53 years to live. Statistically, I will almost certainly contract cancer at some point. And so I'm getting like colonoscopies every 6 months. And I have been since I was 25 years old or 20 years old, which is abnormal. But, you know, obviously you catch things early, that helps significantly.
Well, and prevention matters. And it's, and you know what, the other thing it is it's a body awareness. Because I don't think our society is super great about body awareness, especially preventative sides.
Right.
And people go to the doctor when they get sick, they're not as great about doing the before they get sick to make sure how do things look. And, you know, as we advance as a society with technology, it is almost a brutally beautiful part of it, because it's like, oh, you really don't want to know. You're like, I really want everything to be okay. But if you don't know, then you can't take the steps to help, you know.
And I could see maybe like before I had children, like wanting to just bury my head in the sand and not know. Now I'm like, no, I've got a responsibility to be here as long as I possibly can, you know? So I want to know everything there is to know, no matter how hard it is to hear and find out, or even to know that I have Lynch syndrome to begin with. I was reticent to go get tested because I was like, I know it's going to be positive and I don't want to see it, you know, but you got to do it. And I think that one of you asked me a minute ago about being more resilient. And I think the word I use is courage. And actually I write about this a decent amount. I just wrote an article for Forbes. I don't know if they'll publish it or not, about courage. Because I think and you referenced this earlier, in my family, we refer to cancer as the enemy, right?
Yeah.
But that's not my enemy anymore, right? That fight is over for now. My enemy is fear. And I think I got well acquainted with fear really young in life. And as a result, I could either succumb to it or I could learn to be courageous and overcome it. And I'm not perfect in that anyway, but like I chose that path. And as a result, I turned out to be this incredibly risk tolerant, entrepreneurial type of person that's just like, what's the worst thing that could happen? I'll fail, big deal. I'm not dying. Let's go. You know, I have very little reservations about any kind of risk, because to me, it's like, this is all below the line of, dying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
definitely to be an entrepreneur, you definitely have to be risk averse. You're like, oh, well,
right. You fail. You know,
it's okay.
It's a part of life. Go ahead, Jen.
Yeah, it is. So, yeah. So I definitely, you know, you said we need another hour to talk about your kids, but I think that is something that maybe if you bring that also to your kids, though, I mean, what a beautiful thing to say, you know what, just give it a shot. You're not going to be, there's a certain amount that maybe it's like, I'm not going to be disappointed. Even if we do fail, we've run the race. We're like giving our best shot. Yeah. So.
I can distinctly remember when my first kid, Avery, when she was like, you know, 2 years old, and she's like, she's walking now and climbing stairs and stuff like that. Yeah. And I remember, I won't try to call anybody out in particular, but some people in my family that I'm close to that would come along behind her and go, be careful, be careful, be careful. And that's what's all we say to children. Be careful, be careful, be careful.
That's right.
Drives me crazy. I would go along behind and I would say, be strong and courageous. Be strong and courageous. You know, like just follow it up. Just follow up. Be careful with be strong and courageous.
Go little lion, go little lion.
Exactly. You know, I'm just like, you know, like, no, don't be careful. Like, you know, and it's a mix, right? Obviously you shouldn't just go skydiving every day. Like that's not wise, you know, but it's, I think we as human beings, we're going to experience much more fear naturally. I'm not sure we have to teach our kids so much to just like, you know, like just put a bubble around you. Don't get hurt. Like, they're going to get hurt. They need to learn how to deal with getting hurt and how to like overcome that fear, and that what's going to serve them better as adults, if they have courage or if they're living in fear, you know, like what kinds of people are successful in life, you know? Yeah. So to me, I'm like, I'm not trying to raise good kids. I'm trying to raise great adults. You know, I'm trying to get them to be these people that will kick down whatever wall is in front of them and like go and achieve what they want in whatever time that they have. Because let's be honest, I don't know. Half of my kids are likely to have the same syndrome I do. But time is going to be precious for them too. I hate to think about that, you know, but like that's a reality that's probably there, and I don't have the heart to get them tested yet, you know, and probably won't until they're, you know, of an age where, you know, it's, there's risk that's beginning. But I don't know. I just like, yeah, I think I just see time as very precious, and I'm like, let's go. Let's go. We have time for fear.
I'm just amazed at not only what this preschool teacher has taught you, but the world. Like, I'm like, wow, this mom, but this, the lessons, you know, we have so many people that we talk to, and they turn this caregiving, this part of their life into businesses, or they turn it into a new mission. But from what I hear from you as well, it's changed your whole outlook on life, Jordan. Every component, you know, your kids, I'm sure your marriage, everything, like your whole everything. Because it sounds to me like you got this wife that's, you know, fantastic.
I like her already.
You know, I'm speaking for her. We like her already.
We like you already.
But let me ask you this. I'm going to let you speak for her, and I never let husbands speak for wives.
I'll be respectful.
Because we're going to call her if, you know, you do this. Yeah. So she knew about this. How does she work with this now? Because while you're not, you know, nothing has occurred yet. We always say, the Rosalind Carter, she always says, you either are a caregiver, will be a caregiver, will need care, or will care for someone. Yes. She knows at some point, maybe that's in her cards. Do y'all talk about that?
Well, not only does she know, but she witnessed it. You know, I mean, we were engaged when my mom died. And we had been dating for 4 years. So she was around for a lot. We were like high school sweethearts. She was in high school. I was in college. I was kind of, my buddies gave me a bunch of crap about that, but they were wrong. And I won the pool.
I love that. You all,
we love
wrong.
Your wife. Yeah.
We like her already.
But yeah, so she, you know, she watched my dad, you know, in that role. And, my mom, actually, crazy, crazy story, but she eventually got an infection, and that got into her blood, which I believe is called going septic, or I'm not sure exactly how you phrase that, but and so she went down real fast at the end, like a couple of weeks, and those couple of weeks were the 2 weeks before my wedding. I'm sorry, I'm good.
That's okay. Welcome to the world. Don't worry, we don't edit either.
They were the 2 weeks before my wedding, and so the wedding was planned. We were rock and roll and ready, you know, like everything's, we're almost trying to rush and like try to get my mom to the wedding before, you know, before she passed. And so she passed on July 16th, and the wedding was on July 19th of 2008. And, you know, so my wife is steeped in this. She accompanied me to my mom's funeral on the 18th. We went home, we had lunch, we went back to the same church, and we had our rehearsal. You know, like all in one day. So like, and my wife is, she's, you know, like, I'm sure she thinks about it a lot and prepares herself for that eventuality. And she's not one to like bury her head in the sand either. Like she faces things, you know, head on. And she'd be interesting to hear.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, because at this, so I want to go back for a sec.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So your mom gets cancer, and you, as you're going, because she beats it, and unfortunately, I have to say it, she goes into remission, and then she, and then you're going into college.
Right.
So you're with you're dating your wife.
Yeah.
And, but you're in college. How is caregiving at that point? Like, how did, and tell me a little bit about your dad too, but how was caregiving in the college? And then how's your dad like doing this? Cause your dad is caring for your mom, but then he's still your dad.
Yeah. Yeah. And dad, full-time career.
Oh yeah. So he worked too, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Of course he worked.
We're all like, oh yeah, everybody works.
Oh yeah. Everybody works.
Right. Yeah.
Oprah,
right.
Good job over here.
Yeah. So, college was tough. In that way, you know, because college is the time where you kind of like find who you are and what you're interested in and what kind of direction you're going to go or what camps you might be in socially or politically or what, like you're just sort of making those kinds of decisions, or maybe you're finding your long-term partner, you know, in life. Yeah. But there was this magnetic pull from, you know, I'm from Richmond, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And those listening outside of the country may not know what that means, but one of the eastern states of the U.S. And I went to college about 3.5 hours away. And so there was just this magnetic pull back to Richmond, you know, and my mom really encouraged me to like, no, don't come home every weekend, like live your life, go. But my dad and my brother, I think, had a different perspective, you know, just like, hey, we've always done this caregiving team thing together. Like, where are you? You know? Mm-hmm. And so there was actually a great deal of conflict at that time over that. And, looking back, I can see my fault and my error in that. And I can see their fault and error in that, you know, argument. I don't think either of us were fully right. But that was a really tough time to be geographically distanced and to still have all of that same stuff happening, and all the while trying to find who I am outside of my family and trying to become like a real whole person and an adult. I remember I had a mentor that I met with every week, and he would ask the most natural question in the world when you get to know him. He'd say, how was your week? You know? And I'd say, well, my mom, such and such, and my dad, he had this going on, and my brother, you know, he's feeling this way about that thing. And that's pretty much my week. And so he let that happen for like 3 months. And then he said, Jordan, I'm going to ask you the question again, but let me tell you that every time for 12 weeks straight, I've asked you how you're doing, you've told me how your mom's doing, your dad's doing, and your brother's doing. He was like, you don't have an identity outside of your family. It's all one thing in your mind. And he was exactly right. And that was another moment that changed my life, that I realized like, oh, I don't have an individual identity at all. Mm. I have a group identity, you know, which in some cultures would be perfectly appropriate, you know, and like that's kind of how like family units work. But very abnormal in like the Western countries like the US. But a little bit of a side story, but like just a reflection of how cancer and childhood impacted how I viewed myself. I never really saw myself as anything besides son and brother.
Mm. Yeah. Wow.
Wow. That is so insightful. And I think when you're in the middle of it, you can't see. It's the whole forest for the trees. Yeah. And so you can't see. I never saw that I lost myself as a wife, or what I wanted. It was just always this, you're right about the battle. You're just constantly focused on like, okay, the next appointment, the next result, the next scan, and waiting for this answer. And when we got the 1 year cancer free in June, it wasn't even a relief. We're just like, okay. And then it's like, and you go back to now what? Like, cause you're just kind of waiting, but you lose yourself, your sense of identity. And there's so many caregivers, I think that so resonate with, cause they forgot who they were.
Yeah.
I think you forget who you are when you're fighting this common enemy. And when you stop and you feel like you've ended that, well, now where am I at? Now what?
Right.
So that's interesting. I, number one, I have massive respect for your wife and the fact that you guys just, I'm not surprised though, that your mom passed, you go to the funeral and you're doing this and then you get married the next day. Yeah. I'm not surprised because you've normalized it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And in some ways it was when somebody's suffering that badly, like at the end, it's a relief.
Yeah,
it's a blessing.
The early blessing. Feeling is relief. It's well, thank God she's not suffering anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and those couple of days from Wednesday through the weekend and like the honeymoon and all, like it was like I was probably feeling better than I'd felt in a long time because I'm just like, oh, it's over. But I hadn't yet realized my mom was gone for good. You know, and that's the thing about grief. It's like, that's not your first realization that I'm never going to see this person again.
No, it's
that's not what the first thing you think is. It's not even the 10th thing that you think. But when that hits you, that is a wave. That is a wave of grief that is like, will knock you on the ground.
That's true.
And it's still, the waves are slower. Like they don't come as often as the years go by, but they still come. They still come. And every once in a while, I'm all the pieces. Yeah, and it might be once a year, once every other year, you know, at this point. But every once in a while that wave hits again.
Yeah.
It's true. And you're right. I think that's important as people, for our listeners, if you haven't lost someone like that, especially if you've been a caregiver, if you're so close to it.
Yeah.
Like it feels different when your aunt or a friend or somebody else has cancer or has something that's a chronic complex illness that is like our mom has Parkinson's. She's not going to, we know what the end result is. There's no cure. And so I think that's important. And that thereafter you will experience that. And you're right. It comes in waves. It will come back to you. It could come. I mean, some years like our dad died on the 4th of July. This 4th of July was totally fine. The last year, 11 years, the 11 year mark, I was just like totally not okay. And it's
you
you're
can't
right.
do a daggone thing to control it either.
and it's funny because it's different for everybody. This year was a complete dumpster fire for me. I was like, I'm not talking to anybody. Now it's like it's a good year. I'm like, go away. I can't talk to you. And she was like, it's a good year. It's a blessing. Dad loved you. And I was like, I can't talk to you because what I'm thinking, Jordan, is if I could just get one more phone call, if I just had one voicemail.
Yeah.
And that's it. And so, like I said, for me, I was like, don't call me, Natalie. I can't talk to you. We're not in that same place. And I'm sure you're kind of like that same thing kind of with your brother. Sometimes we're in the same place. Sometimes we're just polar opposite.
Yeah. And that's why I think it adds weight to the relationships with your siblings that you can be manic in that relationship where you're just best friends or you just hate each other.
There's three of us, Jordan. Yes.
You have five. You've got five small terrorists.
I do.
You only have one brother, but you have terrorists in your house.
Yes, you've got, they're either in a peacetime or you are in wartime. And sometimes you've got allies and God bless your wife.
There's a bunch of metaphors we're mixing, but they all work.
Am I right? Because you know it. It's the truth. Okay, wait. So, okay. I know we're getting close to the end of our time because this is so good. You mentioned your relationship with your brother.
Yeah.
So you said stronger. You came out the other end. I mean, it's okay if you still want to kill him every now and then.
You asked
I do that
earlier if there was anything that was off limits, and I said no, but I'm realizing I'm going to actually filter one little piece of the story here because I don't have permission for him to share.
Yeah.
But the night my mom passed away, which ironically, was the first night I ever prayed that she would die. I let myself get there, and because the suffering was just overwhelming, and it happened. And I remember my dad came and woke me up, and I woke my brother up, and we're downstairs and sitting in around the kitchen table, and my mom's a couple of rooms away, and she's gone, and hospice hasn't come yet, or not, sorry, the folks that come pick up the, retrieve the body, I'm not even sure, they hadn't come yet, and we're talking about, like, it's like this weird moment of, like, we're kind of relieved, but it's also the middle of the night, we're exhausted, and, like, somebody needs to write a eulogy, and everybody's looking at me to do that, and which was fine, and I did, and my brother and I started talking, and we ended up saying how we really felt about each other and we were mad we just went at each other and had this giant fight. My dad's like literally like grabbing us, like separating us.
Well, friends, that's a wrap on this week's confession.
And then the tears come.
Again, thank you so much for listening.
And over the next,
before you go, please take a moment to leave us a review and tell your friends about the Confessions podcast. Don't forget to visit our website to sign up for our newsletter. You'll also find the video recording of all of our episodes on the Confessions website and our YouTube channel. Don't worry, all the details are included in the show notes below.
Exactly.
We'll see you next Tuesday when we come together to confess again. Till then, take care of you.
So we just had this knockdown drag out. And ever since that, like that event, that fight, I think was
okay, let's talk disclaimers. You may be surprised by that, but we are not medical professionals and are not providing any medical advice. If you have any medical questions, we recommend that you talk with a medical professional of your choice. As always, my sisters and I at Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver have taken care in selecting speakers, but the opinions of our speakers are theirs alone. The views and opinions stated in this podcast are solely those of the contributors, not necessarily those of our distributors or hosting company. This podcast is copyrighted, and no part can be reproduced without the express written consent of the Sisterhood of Care, LLC.
And it sounds like that was the time that everybody, your mom's not there. And so it's just like, all right, now I'm really going to say it. I think, sadly, it's therapeutic.
I should not have said. I mean, I really was the instigator, if we're honest. And but
that's okay. But we also,
where's Natalie at in the screen? She's always the instigator. I'll point wherever Natalie is. Like, I'm saying what I think, and I'm like, I can't
tell
take
that
it.
For me.
Sorry about that.
There she is.
So, oh gosh, Jordan, we could talk to you for like 10 hours. You're the brother. I'm going to tell you, you're the brother we always wanted because we only, and all the dogs in our house were girls. So even the guinea pig. And so our dad, God bless him, three girls, a mom, the dogs. It was a dictatorship in our house though. And so we got to get to sister questions, Jay, because we got a little bit of time here.
Okay.
It's so important because these are the burning questions. Clearly everybody's going to want to know beyond what this nuggets that he's given us.
Okay. So we talk about risk and you've said, you know what? I just do it. What's the riskiest thing that you've done? You mentioned jumping out of an airplane. I need to know if you've jumped out of an airplane.
I actually have not jumped out of an
airplane. Oh, darn it. Anything you've done.
And I couldn't justify it after that. Like that was like that. The only thing that's held me back from being an extreme adventure nut is children. Because I'm like, if I die doing something stupid, my wife's never going to forgive me. My kids are going to feel betrayed. Like I can't, I just can't do it. You know?
So you have guilt then. So guilt is there. So
I didn't lose that emotion. Some sense of like responsibility to others.
Look at you adulting. That's cute.
Yeah, I know. Gosh, I mean, I don't know what the physical riskiest thing I've done is. Probably some really unsanctioned climbing of some kind. It was just without proper equipment and like, well, I can.
Yes. OSHA violation is what you're saying.
Yes.
Ladders, things like that. Okay, that's fair.
That's my husband.
Or like a rock wall or whatever, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
That's risky. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the risk has been in my career, you know.
Yeah,
I think
totally.
I think it's just been like, I'm just caution. Like, before we started Fringe, one of my co-founders, Jason Murray, and I, and my brother's name is also Jason, different Jason, we had another company and it was doing great. Like steady income getting higher all the time. We're bringing in new clients. And then I had the idea of Fringe and we just threw it out the door and did the crazy risky thing and raised VC money. And like, I had a sure thing, you know, and like just tossed it aside, you know? So, it's almost, it's a little bit of like an addiction. It's just like, well, that
it is.
That sounds even riskier. Like maybe we should do that, you know?
So that's the high.
You can get carried away. Yeah. For sure.
Okay. So, here's my question. What is your favorite guilty pleasure just for you? Your favorite guilty pleasure. And you can say Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Oh my gosh. I'm less that type. I'm more of a nerd.
Let's have it.
I'm a closet nerd. So it's probably, if I could find a group of people that would play a really nerdy board game with me for like 12 hours straight, I would be all in. Like something. Yeah. Well, you're like building a deck and like developing the board and all like Settlers, but like Settlers of Catan, if people know it, but like three times nerdier would be like, that would be my dream, you know? But I have no time or opportunity to do any of that. Normally, when people ask me about my interests, I'm like, I'm a big baseball fan. I'm very cool, you know, very sporty.
Now it's out. Jordan's normal. Yeah. Watch out. Jordan is just like us. All right. Well, Jordan, thank you so much for taking time with us. You are fantastic. And you have given so many like nuggets of wisdom that I think our folks will just resonate with. I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys. I've really enjoyed this. I don't think I've ever enjoyed a podcast recording more, including my own podcast. Great. Really.
Well, everybody, until the next time when we confess again, thanks so much for listening in. We'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.